We just have Jen Apria on the conference call. And everything is on. The recorder is on.
Excellent. All right. Hey, Jen, it's Dana. Have you got her on mute?
Hey.
Okay, hey. I'm going to, since Jen is remote, I'm going to help facilitate tonight. So no, since we have such a large group, I mean.
It's packed out.
So all of our policies tonight are for first reading. So we will, in addition to tonight, go over them 5 more times. So there will be plenty of time for our other board members to hear what we're talking about. The first one is a new policy. It's 1.105, Board Member Conflict of Interest. It is a companion policy to our next one, which is our Code of Ethics 1.106. TSBA recommended that we update, and this is all districts, not just us, but that we update the Code of Ethics policy and we make the Board Member Conflict of Interest a separate policy. So that is what I have done, and I'll tell you one of the main reasons for that, in addition to legal compliance, is that, let me get my statute out. Tennessee Code Annotated 8.17-103, it says that we, if we don't have the same board policy as TSBA, then we have to submit our policy, Code of Ethics, to the state ethics commissions. So typically, historically, we have had the same policy as TSBA, so we aren't, to my knowledge, we've never submitted a separate one. So when TSBA recommends changes to their Code of Ethics, we typically follow them. So that's sort of, and what they've received a lot of questions about the conflict of interest law, and so that's why they've decided to move it into a separate policy of 1.105, and then 1.106 is an updated Code of Ethics. Mm-hmm. Most of those updates is removing the language and putting it in 1.105. So a few tweaks, but I think it just makes it clearer, particularly with the conflicts of interest, so that board members have one place to go to look at that in case they ever have any questions.
So this is straight from the TCA?
A lot of it is, yes. Okay. Between TCA and there are 2 attorney general opinions that are also. But yes, we are really a legal compliance issue more than anything.
And where are the attorney general?
So under the... if you'll look on page 2 of 3,
uh-huh.
The legal references, the Attorney General's opinion 10-46, and then a second opinion of 99-209. In the first one, the question was, may a citizen serve on a school board if the citizen is employed by the school board? And I bet y'all can guess the answer. Which would be no. Once you become a school board member, you can't continue to serve as an employee of the board.
Okay.
And then the second AG's opinion, that's the 99-209, and this was specific to Rutherford County. This member of the Rutherford County Board of Education owned and operated school buses and was contracted with the county through the Board of Education to use those buses prior to his election. And would he have a direct conflict of interest if he continued to run that business regarding school buses, bus owners, drivers? And obviously that answer is also yes. So reference again with your conflicts of interest. Any other questions on 1.105? And then 1.106, a few tweaks. Y'all may remember, so all of the strikeouts are what's gone into 1.105. But on page 2, there is some blue language. You may remember, I don't know, a couple of months ago, we updated some language where we had official or staff or employee just to be consistent. I continued that since we were updating this policy. So board members and school district employees instead of officials and employee spouses, just really more being consistent from policy to policy and language, not anything, not any big changes. And this is the one, 1.106 is the one that I'm gonna advise y'all to adopt this policy because it is the TSBA model policy. And the legislature requires us to submit something different if our code of ethics policy is not their model policy.
So, where was our reading where they had an ethics committee? Do we have that now, or would that be new?
It is not new. We do not have that right now.
Okay.
Because we don't have any ethics complaints.
Okay.
If we received an ethics complaint,
okay,
then the I'll just tell you as an aside, since I've been here, we have not formed an ethics committee. But obviously, this sets out what would happen, what their powers are, all of that, and that's all statute. Jen, you good?
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. All right. The next one is library materials. 4.403. So two changes. On the second page, we're going to change just a tweak on lines 20 and 21 that after the committee reviews the library materials, they're going to present that recommendation to the principal and the superintendent for any further action. One action the superintendent will make is to make that recommendation to the board. So that will come directly from the superintendent. And then Sheila Cleveland could not be here tonight, but she did send me something that she wanted me to share with y'all. So, Donna, I think you heard from Sheila during one of our last meetings, and Drayson, I can't remember if you did or not, about the language in paragraph number 10, mm-hmm, and the kind of what, when we talked about this for discussion, sort of what her vision was. So I'm just going to read what she wrote. This is Sheila Cleveland. We can all agree about the amount of work our librarians have been tasked with this last year. I originally entertained the idea of rating books. However, after thinking about it, I felt it wasn't a practical solution because of the logistics and the amount of manpower to accomplish this task. Public opinion on library books is very subjective, and I feel it puts a heavy burden on the board to cast one vote to make a decision that represents all students and their parents. I believe in total transparency, informing parents about what is available to their child in the library. I would like to update policy 4.403, library materials. I believe I have a solution that I hope we all can agree on. The solution takes the, in quotes, opt-out a few steps further and may alleviate the worry of possible student rights infringements.
Can we get that in writing, or is that...
No, but we'll have it on the...
it's on the audio.
On the audio, uh-huh.
And so is this 10?
So that 10, so here's what we talked about. So this would be after the board vote with on any challenged library materials. If y'all voted to keep the materials in the library, or if you voted to remove the materials. After that vote, there would be a written notification provided by either the principal or the assistant principal. That notification would go to all parents or guardians of students in all same grade band level schools. So, I'll give you an example. Is that if I'm Franklin, if we have a challenge at Franklin High School, and it is a book in their library that grades 9 through 12 could read, regardless of the vote, remove or keep, a written notification would then be sent out by all high school administrators to their parents and guardians. And it would say the title and the author of the challenged material, the action taken by the board, and it would also include the process that the parent or guardian would need to follow to opt their child out of checking out that library material. So, if it was a book that was kept in the library, the parent or guardian would still know there was a challenge, it was voted on, it's in the library, and that parent may determine it's not appropriate for my child. So they would know by receiving a written notification from the principal or assistant principal how they could opt out of that title and their child could not check it out. Does that process sound clear?
Yeah, I think we need, on the bottom of this, legal references, I think we need the Age Appropriate Materials Act. And what is...
So that is what TCA 49-6-3803.
Okay, is that it?
Yep,
okay.
That's it.
It doesn't say it, but I didn't know.
Right.
I should recognize it by now.
Well, I know, because we do talk about it a lot.
We do.
So if the parent...
Dana, I had a... Oh.
Go ahead.
Thanks. Sorry, Jason. I had a question about the part where it says a written notification shall be provided by the principal or assistant principal to all parents. Would it make more sense to leave that specific bit out just because that's a little bit operational and leave it? The policy will state that the notification needs to go out to parents and then central office can kind of decide how it goes out.
Well, we talked about that, and I think staff agreed it should be in writing so that it wasn't a call out. I don't think any of our principals would do a call out, but that was when we kind of talked through this, we did think it needed to be written. It could
I agree with that.
I don't know
if it's the best idea to have it be so specific of who needs to be the one sending it, just because it may make more sense if it's only at certain schools, if it's a library book, if you want to send it district-wide, maybe it should come from Lee Webb or, you know, Carol Birdsong or somewhere else, but it could come in writing. I just don't know. It could come from the assistant principal or principal. I just don't know if we want to tie our hands as just committing to it has to come from them. If that makes sense.
It does. I think that is totally up to the board. If originally, I think we had talked. I think the board members had talked about it coming from the principal. So if there were questions, they would go back to the school. But.
That makes sense.
Yeah,
and it might be coming from a principal. They might recognize the email more readily than know the name.
And actually, I mean, quite literally,
sure.
Open it and read it was why we had thought that. If that's something, and I think all of this will be good discussion at the work session as well, since we don't have as many board members here. And if we want to make that tweak, and I guess we could put that in there. As a designee in case we had, I'm thinking elementary where we only have two administrators, we could have one out, and then it could be appropriate coming from Dr. Oyer or, okay.
Yeah, that's why I was thinking, just saying a written notification shall be provided to all parents, just so that we know it will be provided in writing. We're not just committed to who it will come from, basically.
Yep. What do you think, Jen, about provided by the principal or designee? So then if we have a principal that's out, then central office could help out.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. I still think we like the principal being the primary communicator.
Sure. That makes sense.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but I really like this amendment. I think it's smart, and it takes that feeling I had before about how it's a lot of pressure on us to have to vote on a book and make this decision. This puts it back to the parents to really be transparent and let them know, and they can make that choice to opt out if they want to.
I think we like it too, because not every parent is watching a school board meeting or a work session, and they may not
right.
know. And so this gives sure. them a chance to decide for their child. I think that's great. Yeah.
Tracy, I agree. Thank you.
Yeah. So then what is our response whenever the parents, when they don't respond to the information that we're sending up?
So that's a great question. So if the book is removed, that book is still removed. It's just that would be a notification letting the parents know that that book was removed. If the book remains in the library, for students whose parents do not contact the library, they could check out that book. But it allows parents, since the book, I think it's going to be the most useful when the book is still in the library. It allows parents and guardians to make that decision themselves. Again, in case they are not aware that material has been challenged. So I think it's just another way for us to keep that open communication with parents.
So with this, the language that we're talking about now, with the books remaining in the library, does this reduce the liability that we were discussing?
This is... Yes. Yes. It allows parents to have that choice
okay.
that we all want them to have.
Got it.
Yes. Okay. So yes.
Thank you.
Dana, I heard something a little differently when you read it out loud. So I'm going to ask the question just because it's in my head. Is it clear in that final paragraph that no, either way, a notification is sent, right? Am I right?
Yes.
That statement is factual, yes?
Yes, yes, so, you are okay. correct. That's our intent.
So if that is the case, does it make sense that we say it explicitly, or is it understood that if it is removed, we send a notice that it has been removed? If it is not removed, we send a notice that says, this process just occurred, now, Mama Oyer, here's the process that you would go through if you wanted that to not be in your children's hands.
So I think I can make a tweak to that.
Okay.
So that last sentence says, so it says first, the first sentence, after the board votes, it's sent out.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to send it out every time.
Yep.
That there is a vote.
Yep.
Notification.
And they would have to vote. Because that's the end
that's correct.
Of the process.
As of right now.
Okay. Yep. Okay.
Notification shall include the title and author of the challenged material and the action. So we're going to tell them whether it was removed, whether it's still in the library.
That's right.
So I think the next part, and if the challenged library material remains in the library, the process, blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
Gotcha.
It makes it more clear.
Yeah. It does, and that way we're not going to send a process. I mean, I guess we could, but okay.
We could even, this is, I was just going to say we could make it a new sentence too, instead of like dragging it, but we don't have to. That's just the, I put a period after taken by the board, period.
We can, yeah.
But I don't know.
It doesn't matter. I mean,
I'm not closely attached to it.
I feel confident it will continue to tweak.
Yes, and I think.
But yes, we can make those changes, absolutely.
But we'll make the designee versus assistant principal. That decision will be made at work session, or
I will go ahead and put I'll mark through assistant principal and put designee so they can see it. And I'm going to go ahead and add the challenge library materials is removed, if that's removed, and then I'm sure we'll continue to tweak.
Okay.
But I'll have that ready for the work session.
Okay.
Anything else on that policy? All right. Okay.
I have one question on the 7E, the changes.
Yes.
Does this change the process or is that just...
It doesn't change the full process. What it changes is currently the committee made the presented the recommendation to the principal, because remember, that's who's putting the committee together, and the superintendent and the board. So what we are doing is the principal, the committee's giving it to the principal and the superintendent.
And then the superintendent,
makes the recommendation to the board.
Versus,
Yeah. And that's pretty consistent with what we do at meetings when Jason makes a recommendation to y'all. So it just streams lines it a little bit.
Okay.
All right. Dress code. And I'm going to say again, remember, we're going to go through this 6 times. Because this looks very different, or different, I won't say very, but it looks different than our current dress code policy. Some of the feedback that we have gotten, and I'm going to hit some things, and then I'm sure that Lee and Julie will hit some things as well, because they have worked with a committee of our administrators for their feedback, and I've looked at it from my legal lens. Some of the issues that we have addressed, one was taking out the language that says that minimizes distractions, and changing that to really what is the legal interpretation, and that's a disruption. So I want y'all to look at the lens of a dress code, not through a distraction, but through a disruption, because obviously we want a learning environment for all of our students. And we're also gonna make sure that the health and safety of our students are taken care of. Just to be clear, this is one policy for all schools or programs. We're not going to have individual policies at different schools. We did that years ago. That's not anything that I'm aware currently is going on, but we want to be very clear in that. Then I'm confident we will come back to the minimum safe attire, but from my legal lens, I want y'all to remember any changes that we make need to be for all genders, and we need to be gender neutral. And so that is a lot of the language that we have utilized in here, so that we are being non-discriminatory in our language and in our enforcement. So at the end, at the bottom of page 1, going into page 2, we do not want clothing depicting violence, criminal activity, what we would call a lot of our zero tolerance offenses.
What line are you at?
I am at 36 and 37 on the first page, and then it goes on to the next page. We wouldn't want them to advertise, advocate, depict alcohol, tobacco, vapes. Don't want to depict pornography, nudity, sexual acts. These are all pretty consistent consistent with our enforcement at this point. Extracurricular activities, we have changed that a little bit, that the principal is in cooperation with the sponsor coach, and that they can regulate dress and grooming of the student who participates in the activity. That is what's happening. We're just making that pretty clear. And then dress code enforcement. And again, from a legal lens, when we are talking about enforcement, gender neutral. We do not want to treat students based upon their gender differently. Think back to the days when I was in high school, and if your skirt was too short, you were on your knees and there was a ruler. We don't want to do that now. We also don't, you know, want to treat boys differently because of something that they would have on or not have on. So I think that's my legal lens, and then probably the practical, the other piece I'm going to let Lee and Julie talk about, and feedback from principals.
Yeah, well, thank you for that explanation, Dana. It's a good intro to it. I think what you're going to see, we had, actually, the conversation really started on the strong rewrite after one of our policy meetings, when a board member brought a dress code policy from another state, I believe it was Texas, and brought for us to look at. And that dress code seemed to more clearly depict what our students wear. And to Dana's point, students wearing those items isn't a disruption to the school day. And I think that conversation really led into some great dialogue at the schools. Also, we heard the feedback from parents that it's hard, especially for young ladies, to purchase clothes to wear that fit our current dress code. As styles change and what stores produce meeting the demand of the public, we were seeing that it was indeed very difficult for students to purchase items, especially with the length of skirts and shorts hitting mid-thigh. Those really are not readily available in most stores for the age that we serve in K-12. So what you're going to see here in this dress code is what we think is in line with our community tolerance, with our school tolerance, with the availability of how we can enforce it. It's enforceable. It seems to be in line with what kids are attempting to wear to school now. And some schools find it to be exceptionally time-consuming to enforce our current dress policy, dress code policy, versus what students are wanting to wear and purchasing to wear to school, which this policy aligns with. Much of our conversation was around, does this dress code policy, does what young people, what they're wanting to wear to school, is it a disruption? And the answer to most of those items was no, it's not a disruption. You're going to see in this dress code policy the removal of a required length and more focus on what parts of the body shouldn't be shown at school that would cause a disruption. And the focus is on keeping that bare minimum and exceeding it versus a required length of a mid-thigh or a measurement that would require, you know, a ruler or some kind of other measurement. You're going to see in number three of what the expectations are, that those are the items, or the body parts rather, that must be covered at all times. Whether you're walking up the stairs, you're bending over to pick up your backpack, those are all pieces of the body that we feel like would cause a disruption if they were seen in school.
And where's that?
That's number three on the first page. No, excuse me, on the
four.
I've got two different versions. Hold on a second. Yes, number four on the first page. So that is line 21 on the first page of the dress code. Certain body parts must be covered for all students at all times. And so really those seven, beginning right there on line 16 through 34, is the basic outline of what we've depicted can be worn without there being a disruption. And again, walking through as spring nears through our high schools and seeing the struggle that our administrators have with enforcing our current dress code, what we're seeing is that this dress code that we have in front of you is what young people are wearing to school.
And that with them wearing it, it's not.
And it's not a disruption. It's not a disruption, yeah.
Do you feel like they'll push the boundaries? We set a boundary, right, and they walked up to it. Right, the line, and now that it's more relaxed, do you think they'll push it again? Or do you think this will be the norm, is what we're seeing in high schools
we
now?
We feel like that this is the norm in the community.
Okay.
And but our experience in schools with dress codes is that you make the line, you can expect for there to be a testing of the boundary below it, regardless of where you put the line. Are we going to have testing of that? Yes.
Okay.
we will have testing of that, which is why we felt like we needed to be explicitly clear. Mm-hmm. If you test the lines of this dress code, which really is the bare minimum before there's a disruption to the school day, that you can expect what we've depicted on beginning on page 2, I believe, of what the consequences are going to be of regressive discipline and how we get you back into compliance so that you can continue as quickly as possible back with the school day, beginning on page 2, line 33.
So there is no, like, I think that this is a lot more subjective, possibly, but there's nothing that talks about skirt length or short length.
There is no length. There's no length. Those body parts that are depicted there on page 1, number 4, those body parts can't be shown at any time. If those body parts are covered, there is no additional length that's required.
Do you think, maybe this is a question for a work session, but do you think that the administrators will have an easier time or a harder time enforcing this with it being not as black and white? Mm-hmm. That would be my
Well, it is black and white because we're saying pretty explicitly there's certain parts of your body we should never see at school.
Okay.
If you have those body parts covered, those sections of your body covered at all times, that's the code. And so the general feel is that dress code is always and forever going to be difficult to enforce.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's always going to require attention. Our feeling is that this is as close as we can comfortably get to what our community expectation is and what's enforceable and what especially young ladies are able to purchase at the store to wear, and what fashion trends, you know, kind of mirror. I will be honest with you all. There are two things that produced the most conversation in this dress code policy. One was the length of the skirt or the shorts.
Yeah.
That was a constant conversation. You know, where do you draw the line? Is it 2.5 inches? Is it mid-thigh? Is it your fingertips? There's all those kind of
measurement
techniques.
Bodies are all different.
Every body is different, 100%, exactly where we ended. And what is it that we're hoping to do? Well, we're hoping to not have a disruption based on those restricted body parts being seen on campus. So that's where we went back to it. The second is the description of the chest. You know, how can we describe which parts of the chest we don't want to see, whether you're a male or a female, and it's explicitly clear to students. It's uncomfortable for probably board members, it certainly is for teachers, to see nipple written in a policy and talk to young kids about showing your nipple at school. Like, that is an uncomfortable piece, but we talked a lot about that and being explicitly clear for males and females about which body parts can't be seen on campus and which are permissible, whether it's a tank top, a halter top, or whatever male-female shirt might be looking like. I think a majority of the committee would feel fine if that word was left out, if the word nipple was left out, but it was left in this draft for the explicit communication about what a man should be wearing, what should be shared
and
with a man,
same page,
what should be shared with a woman. It's explicit.
What did he say?
I said we're on the same page on this one.
No, what did he say?
Oh, no, I said totally.
He said,
okay.
It was a lot of conversation.
There was.
Those two pieces, if I think different members of the committee, different administrators have various levels of comfort with those two items. And to agree. The on the top portion of it, I think there's universal agreement that those items shouldn't be shown, those body parts shouldn't be shown.
It's just how it's depicted.
It's about how it's depicted and clearly. What is the length, you know, in quotes, what is the length that should be the minimum when our goal really is to ensure that there are no restricted body parts that are shown in school.
Everything should be covered.
That's right.
And, right.
Just make sure you're covered and then come learn. That's the main thing.
And where was it in here? Because I know, there's so many words now. But, for example, like if someone bends over and it's like...
Sure. All body parts at all times. And so in the enforcement communication, we would...
Oh, that's
know,
at 4. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And we talked about that with administrators.
Okay.
And there obviously will be some training. There'll be some training for students, for administrators, for parents and guardians. But all times means with your backpack on and now... Your clothes have shifted.
Mm-hmm.
When you're going up steps, that means at all times. When you're sitting down, all of the things.
Okay.
The other thing that we did, which I learned a lot about shorts and what we call them or don't call them, and it was really walking through administrators with, okay, this is what the kids are wearing now to school. Is that, in fact, a disruption?
Yeah, good.
And it was a good, I will agree, the length was where we spent a lot of time. The other piece that is different is the straps from our previous policy. We didn't spend a lot of time on that. Mm-hmm. I think everybody was pretty comfortable with a spaghetti strap.
Any strap that goes over both shoulders, it can tie behind the neck, it can connect to the back of the shirt. Mm-hmm. But as long as there are two straps that went over the shoulder, we felt like that would do the intention of the policy. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Number, let's see, your dress code enforcement, mm-hmm. B, I guess 4B.
Yes.
So is that saying basically they can have clothing provided, like from a friend or something at school?
A friend or the school. You know, we always had like a small stash of just generic clothing. If a student couldn't get dress code,
yeah.
They didn't have anything in their locker, couldn't get a hold of mom or dad, we would just check them out a t-shirt. Those are limited supply. Obviously, if there were 50 kids out of dress code, we may not have 50 shirts on campus.
Sure.
So, but if we had them available, that would be one way
okay.
to get back in.
That was
class.
My suggestion. I didn't know if there was a closet or if that was making a child feel like they're being discriminated against because they were
wearing the school issued attire.
Right.
Yeah.
So I didn't know if that was appropriate or not.
For some kids it feels like a scarlet letter.
Right,
right
on, yeah.
That, you know, I'm wearing something that's broadcasting
no,
to everyone that I can't.
But they chose to
come
in.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
But
okay.
Yes, we definitely talked with administrators. They could borrow from a friend.
Yeah. Can I just get it out of my locker?
Can I get it out of my locker? I brought a sweatshirt, I just don't want to wear it, it's in my locker. You know, whatever gets them back
yeah.
in class.
And so then the last question that I had on this one was progressive discipline. What does that look like? Does that look like detention?
It would be. Yeah.
ISS?
Yeah. And so
well,
for
probably
most
not ALC.
No, sir.
No.
Okay. It would have to be pretty egregious continual to work that chain to get to ALC. But for most of our schools, entry-level consequences, a call home. You know, I've met with Lee 3 times. She's, you know, continues to be out of dress code, like have that communication home. After that, detention. Some have lunch detention, some have after school detention, depending on their staffing needs. And then just progressive on, just documenting those. And our ask of administrators is to, you know, document those in Skyward so that we have thorough communication and the parents are in the loop of each one of those.
Good.
And I will tell you, we pulled, and I'll pull it again before our next policy meeting. When we started this conversation, we pulled it progressive discipline that had made it into Skyward, so not a call or not a put on a sweatshirt or mm-hmm. whatever. And we had very low double digits of actual discipline that made it to Skyward, and at that time, more males were disciplined than females, which is not.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
What anecdotally we hear.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll get that again, an updated version of that so we can see what those numbers look like.
I think my last question, and it may be more for a work session, but I was just curious about the wording on page 2, line 34. I think before we've had does not discriminate. And why we chose does not reinforce, increase marginalization, or oppression. I was curious on the wording on that.
I think that was wording from the Texas policy. I don't have any. It's
page 2,
page
two, line
33, 34.
2 of 3, mm-hmm. line 34.
Yes.
Dress code enforcement.
Yeah,
first,
number one.
Yeah, let me look back.
Yeah, I was just curious about that.
Yeah, I can't remember if it was there or if it was out of case law. I pulled from a couple different places.
Okay. Yeah, we can talk about it at work session.
It was resourced out. I do remember that piece of it. It was from a resource that we pulled. It wasn't a conversation point where there's a certain word added for a particular purpose. In our viewpoint, The gist of that is to ensure it's not, you know, discriminatory in any way. I'm indifferent on how it's communicated with actual words.
Okay.
We did feel like the body size and type was an important piece of that as well. We spent a lot of time
talking
about that.
No, I do like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I was more looking at those.
Yeah, for sure.
Adjectives.
Yes, ma'am.
Hey, this is Jen. I thought that was great, and I appreciate all the work that went into this as a mom, and like just from what we've heard from all the other constituents about the issues that they've had over the last couple of years with dress code. I think this is a huge step in the right direction to resolving so many of those, and does make it very black and white and easier to be consistent across the different schools. So I think this is great, and appreciate what you guys have done.
Thanks, Jen. I know it took a little while to get it, but I think we...
It was worth the wait.
Well, good. I'm glad, because I know you were anxious for us to get it, but we...
Yeah.
I think staff has worked hard to come up with...
Yeah.
Because the general consensus from staff was we don't want to update dress code again for a long time.
Yeah, this is good, because it keeps it just right, you know?
Right, right.
It's all the right points.
Good.
Another point,
so thank you.
Yes, thank you for that. Another point that I want to share too is that the timing of this dress code conversation at the board level is strategic too, because if we have these kind of conversations and change the policy too early in the academic year with, you know, months left,
yeah.
Students tend to really push the envelope and it's hard for administrators to keep their arms around. So starting this conversation in April
is
strategic.
Yeah.
We can get our policy, you know, vetted, approved, and implemented just in time for the end of the school year.
That's great.
All right.
Thank y'all for your work on that.
Absolutely. So the next one and our last one for tonight is medicines. I worked with Mandy Thompson, our nurse. On this one, there are quite a few legal changes. And you will see on our last page, State Board of Education policy as well as regulations were updated. So that's where you're seeing the blue. And some of it, let's see. So on the first page, name and signature, if there is a prescription of that physician. Instead of with students with asthma, changing it from purpose of the medication to when and how to administer. We don't care what the purpose is. We want to know when and how to administer it. And then we do have changed a little bit of wording. Medication that is exempt by Tennessee law to be self-carry and authorized by the prescribing health care practitioner, and then it goes through what that person needs to do. We're just making that clear as to why some medication is allowed to be on a student and some medication is not.
Like an EpiPen or something?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's a great example. So we do have that, and I will say most of our... very rarely do we run into a problem with a student not having the requested information. Then on page 2, we do have a new update on students being able to possess and self-administer this prescription medication. We do have, you'll see in lines 15 through 17, that the superintendent of schools will develop procedures for a student, mm-hmm. and we do have those already. So we've been practically, from a practical standpoint, already in compliance with this law. We did add on page 2, students with cystic fibrosis or pancreatic insufficiency, with a written authorization from the healthcare provider and a parent, they shall be allowed to carry and self-administer their pancreatic enzymes. And lastly, on the last page, students with adrenal insufficiencies, they can also, we can train personnel for the treatment of adrenal insufficiencies. If the prescribing healthcare provider authorizes us in writing to do that, and any who will volunteer to administer that medication we do have, throughout the district, it's amazing the amount of medications that are brought to the school nurse, and the procedures that our school nurses and other staff members, paraprofessionals, teachers, handle on a daily basis with our students. So I think I feel really good about the updates from a legal compliance standpoint, but also from our nurses in the building. It gives them some additional support when they talk to parents and guardians about needing, you know, certain information so that they can support kiddos with health issues.
Do we know if all of our high schools are supplied with Narcan? I know, obviously.
They are. The SROs carry
them. SROs carry them.
SROs?
In every building.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But not
the nurses?
The nurses
also. The nurses also. And,
It's amazing what all medical equipment, in a good way, that we've got.
Thankful for that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Well, guys, with that, we're finished.
All right.
My goodness. That was fast.
Speedy speed.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jan.
Be safe.
Be careful.
Bye.